Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place for the gentlemen nerds. The gentlemen nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, getting together to talk about all things nerdy, mostly in the vein of film, television, toys, and popular culture. Many topics are discussed, so please be warned, there are the potential for many spoilers. If you like what you hear, you can listen to past shows on iTunes or on our website, thegentlemannerds.com. And now, enjoy the show. Theme songs and soundtracks from our favorite movies and television shows always invoke memories and emotions. And the very best ones are permanently part of our pop culture landscape. And without them, and the talented composers who create them, films like Star Wars, Indiana Jones, heck, even John Carpenter's Halloween, wouldn't quite be the same, would it? Both movies and television benefit from the talent of these amazing composers and musical pieces. This evening, in the Lobot Lounge, the gentlemen are gathering and getting musical as we discuss our favorite music and explain why these selections get our nerd blood a-pumpin'. Warning, ladies and gentlemen, this episode may contain some off-key singing or mangling of theme music, no offense intended. Gathered in the Lobot Lounge, as always, is Mark Finn.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
Aaron DeArrive.
We will grok you.
And I'm Joseph Watinos, your host and emotional touchstone. Welcome to the Lobot Lounge. Also joining us here at the table is our attorney, Dr. Gonzo, and musical expert, Ben Gibbs. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and for those of you that don't know, Dr. Gonzo is our official gentleman nerd's attorney, and he broadcasts from a small cave somewhere in parts unknown.
He's also advised us that we really shouldn't be playing anybody's copyrighted music, which is why we're going to be singing off key for the whole show. It'll be awesome.
It'll be awesome. Soundtracks. My gosh, we touched on this briefly before the show started, ladies and gentlemen, and already there was an outpouring of amazing stuff. Now, we all know the classics. We can hum the Star Wars theme and the Indiana Jones music gets our blood pumping. I really think that, and this is going to be so much fun, to share maybe some soundtracks that you guys aren't familiar with and go, oh, I've never even heard of that. I want to check it out. And hopefully you'll do that after we're done here. So, gentlemen, with your permission, I think we should do maybe a round robin style and do rounds and share, our favorite themes and then maybe explain why. And if there's a story behind it from years ago or our childhood or recently or whatever, how that makes us feel and why we love it so much. Would you guys be okay with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Sounds great.
So we're going to jump back and forth, but I'd like to start with television. So, the small screen can be just as effective, if not more so, than sitting in the movie theater and enjoying something on the big screen. So, starting with Mr. Mark Finn, why don't you pop out a TV theme for us and tell us about it?
I will start with one of my all-time favorite inspirational pieces of music. It's a name that not a lot of people know. Hoyt Curtin was the musical director at Hanna-Barbera in the 1950s and 60s. Mm-hmm. He was to Hanna-Barbera what Carl Stalling was to Warner Brothers. He wrote all of the jingles for their ads. He wrote all of the bumper music. He wrote all of the theme songs, all of them, everything from the Flintstones to the Jetsons, to Birdman. And of course, one of my all time favorite pieces of music, the theme to Johnny Quest.
Nice.
This music absolutely, It does exactly what your score should do. It supports the material and informs you immediately what you're going to be seeing. And it is, when these kinds of things are done well and correctly, of course, it's every screenwriter's job to embellish and emphasize and support the material. But Curtin sets the stage at the beginning And what I love about this theme, of course, you guys probably know the dun 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 dun, and there's and if you listen to it, even especially without the accompanying, you know, the jungle sound effects and visuals, you can hear the trombones, and it sounds like they're kind of rushing. You know, there's this kind of like frantic, like struggling to keep up kind of thing. Well, guess what? That was because the whole thing was a dare. It was literally written because they had been working on stuff like Rough and Ready and Wally Gator, and the session musicians that Curtin had put together. He put together this really kind of crack orchestra of people. They were sitting around between takes, and they were bragging about how there really isn't anything they can't play, and you know, they could sight read all this stuff and get it in one and two takes, and they were getting kind of cocky. And so Curtin had been doing some stuff and knew that this was coming up, so he went home and he wrote the Johnny Quest theme, and he specifically wrote it for the trombone section, who was complaining particularly loudly. Now these guys are all practiced hands. Nobody, modern trombones have a valve that you can depress with your thumb that actually adds extra tubing to let you get out do in positions one and two notes that you would normally hit in positions six and seven. Well, these guys didn't have that. And so they're literally having to move the slide back and forth, literally jerking it back and forth as fast as possible. There's two takes of it, of the soundtrack. And in the first take, they get through it, but it's just a mess. And they get through with this thing. And you don't hear it because they cut the tape. But as soon as they did, the bitching that went up. And Curtin was like, "Hey, I thought you guys said you could play anything." And he literally wrote it in a minor key and literally put these 16th notes in and these 64 notes that were just so tight that the guys were and they never really actually got it note perfect. What you hear, that sloppy all over, it was as good as they could get it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. But that piece of music gets my blood up as just as much as the Star Wars fanfare and anything else.
Easily. I always picture frogmen getting crushed by a boat, and when that mummy crashes through the door, and it's like dun 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 dun, and that mummy's just stalking. I'm like, oh my god, this is awesome.
That is iconic. That when it comes to theme songs, I don't think it gets any more, especially for those sorts of shows. Yeah. It doesn't get any more iconic than Johnny Quest. I mean,
this is a cartoon. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it was a cartoon, but it was a primetime cartoon. It was actually it was sponsored by Buster Brown Shoes, and it was shown in the PM time slot. A lot of people think The Simpsons was the first primetime cartoon, and that's not true. Yeah. Hanna-Barbera did a lot of them in the 60s.
Well, The Flintstones was primetime at one point, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And so of course, Curtin led me straight to Lalo Schifrin and Mission Impossible, but that's we'll do that on another go around.
nice. Aaron, television.
early on, of course, I'm going to talk about the amazing widespread Nelson Riddle. Nelson Riddle, of course, probably most famously known for the 60s Batman. And though I love what he did for Batman, and it's an amazing tune that is sung even today, and has been incorporated into all kinds of remixes and techno beats and disco songs. The one I remember growing up with that I loved, and I used to watch this show, it was a double feature. We would watch Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom first to see, you know, what's his face wrestle with the tiger. Well, actually, more to the point, to see Jim wrestle with the tiger.
Right.
Marlon Perkins watched from the safety of the jungle.
Or camera.
Yes. But he wrote the theme for the Tarzan, the 60s Tarzan TV series with Ron Eli. He didn't write the original theme, was different, was written by a different individual, but he came in, Nelson Riddle came in, I think in the, maybe the second season, or maybe several episodes into it. And he wrote such an iconic, I mean, of course it starts with the jungle beats, and then it just goes into this, it's just so good. It is so good. It's on YouTube. I suggest our listeners go and look it up. Tarzan theme, Nelson Riddle. Man, that theme. I was telling Mark that sometimes I wake up in the morning and that theme's just playing in my head. I don't even know why. It's just, I go, so that I would say is one of the early themes that I just absolutely adore, Nelson Riddle's Tarzan theme.
Yeah. And for our listeners, just in case, Aaron does sleep, in fact, in a treehouse. So waking up with that in his head is normal. It's normal for him.
Yeah.
He comes. He descends from the tree on a vine. It's very bestial and kind of hot. Pretty cool.
The leopard print pajamas really make the image there.
It does. Yeah, that's the leopard print pajamas. Absolutely.
Oh, and by the way, folks, never sneak up on Aaron Diarrive while he's asleep. He's not really asleep. No. He's never really asleep. That's something you should remember.
I lie in wait. That's right.
I'm gonna go TV and I'm gonna go back to cartoons. Hey, surprise everyone! I like monsters. I know. Who knew? Richard Delvey and Ed Fournier and Dick Monda had a group in the 70s called Daddy Dewdrop, and they didn't really have a whole lot of hits. They had one hit in 1971 called Chicka Boom. Now, I know this rather wacky novelty song because it was exposed to me on the Groovy Ghoulies. And the Groovy Ghoulies, the theme song for the Groovy Ghoulies, the Ghoulies Get Together, by who was it? Linda Martin. Yes, Linda Martin and Janice Gwynn wrote the Ghoulies Get Together theme song. And it's a jaunty, happy little monster theme song. And the Groovy Ghoulies, in case you don't know, was originally released as Sabrina the Teenage Witch and the Groovy Ghoulies. They had their own special together. But then they decided to pull Sabrina from the Archie comics out and give her own show. And the Ghoulies had some staying power, so they got their own show after that too. And it was until when that happened and they premiered the Groovy Ghoulies there at Horrible Hall, it was almost like a monster laugh-in with wacky jokes and one-liners. Yeah. They even had a segment where they all popped out of the wall, weird window time, and they all told wacky jokes. It was like laugh-in, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, being a monster kid, that was like a dream come true. And that song would just get my blood going. And the Groovy Ghoulies themselves, Drac and Wolfie and Frankie, they were singing and playing in the music too. So Wolfman's sitting on Drac's organ and he's playing the guitar and Drac's just jamming out on the organ and Frank's banging on the drums and the xylophones with these big bones. And it's just, everybody shout, come on now, sing out. It's time for the Ghoulies get together. It's just so much fun. It opens the door and says, you like monsters? Come in here. Check this out, you know? Oh, it's wonderful.
By the way, so you know, that was one of my favorite cartoons as a kid. Oh, I loved the Groovy Ghoulies.
Mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm. I am an official ghoulatic. I will admit that. And I've got them all. And periodically, I'll watch them from time to time. So back to Daddy Dewdrop really quick, because the Groovy Ghoulies would do two songs during their show. The first song was always the Groovy Ghoulies themselves. They would sing, do a song. And the second song was a special guest band. And it was always like, you know, the Singing Tombstones or the Spirits of 76 or, you know, one of those guys. And Daddy, the Chicka Boom premiered on the Groovy Ghoulies. If you listen to the song Chicka Boom, it's a little adult. It tells the story of a dream and a girl in a black bikini, and the bikini starts falling off and he's chasing after her in this dream. And he's trying to find her because she's hot and naked. Well, they changed that, obviously, for the cartoon. They made it, you know, less provocative, but still a girl in a black bikini that he's chasing around in a dream. But that's where I first heard Chicka Boom, Don't You Just Love It. And that's the Groovy Ghoulies were full of all kinds of groovy 70s music, kids. A lot of fun.
Ben, do you have one?
I very much do, yeah. I'm gonna cheat a little bit. The Twilight Zone theme by Bernard Herrmann.
Oh, no, yeah, that's great.
And I'm cheating because you can't really sing it. So I don't have to sing it off key.
We could try.
We could. It's those.
Is that some kind of a dare, Ben?
Because we'll do it right now.
I mean, we can, but oh, those clusters, those the notes real close together like that. Mm. So it's Bernard Herrmann. It's cheating because when we get to movies, I'm gonna pick Bernard Herrmann again.
That's okay. Yeah.
but that theme. That is TV. I don't know. I grew up watching reruns because
when it comes to iconic music, the Twilight Zone absolutely sits at the top.
Yeah. And it sets a good theme and a good feel for what you're about to see, which I think. Ben, as a musician yourself, you can appreciate how to create mood and tell your audience what you're about to see or hear by, you know, just a few notes in the beginning. You go, okay, I'm setting the mood, right?
And that's, I think, what Herman's really good at is that in three notes, you know what you're about to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what he's not playing that's interesting in the Twilight Zone. Yeah, it's really, I agree. That's a fantastic theme.
It really is. Go ahead.
Oh, it's a little bit more mainstream. I know we've been going for slightly outside, but
we have to talk
about Bernard Herrmann a little bit if we're going to talk about
movies. Oh, no, and by the way, to be clear, we are going to talk about the Giants when we get to, you know, movies. We're going to talk about Williams and Goldsmith. I mean, we cannot talk about the Giants. So good. Yeah. All right. Awesome.
There are so many options here, folks. And we just scratched the surface just barely talking about TV. I'm going to go into a lightning round, do one more TV round, if you guys don't mind.
No, absolutely not.
Let's pop out two. We'll keep it brief, but we'll pop out two themes from TV that we just love. Briefly explain why, share the title, let our folks dive in and look for themselves. Back to you, Mark. Give us two TV themes that stand out for you.
Well, Lalo Schifrin, as I said before, Mission Impossible, that is one of the all-time greats, you know. And another one that absolutely sets up what you're going to be watching because it's international intrigue, mystery. And that's one of the ones where you can do it. And not only do people know what you're seeing, but they know that you're about to be up to something.
He's up to something.
You can turn to somebody and go dun 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 dun, dun, yeah. dun and they go, what are we doing? What's next?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
First we gotta put out the fuse because clearly shit's gonna blow up.
In fact, if you notice, if you're among a group of geeks and you start to sing that song, everybody will go into a crouch. It's instinctive.
It's instinctive. It's funny.
I'm ready.
The other one that that stands out for me is in the same kind of vein, and it's a slightly different take on the same kind of subject. And I'm cheating too, because this was done in movies and television, but I first heard it on TV is the Pink Panther theme by Henry Mancini.
And
you know, of course, that's another one that we're. At least initially, I didn't always understand the significance. But when you go and realize that it's, you know, based on a jewel heist, it makes perfect sense, you know.
Yeah.
And so Mancini was another one of these jazz influenced composers that was doing stuff with you know, a lot of percussion and swing. And I think that's where I first got interested in jazz, you know, listening, you know, big fat horn sections, and glockenspiels, you know. I love that stuff.
It's smooth. It's a smooth theme, and it's done so well. And again, iconic, man. These themes are remembered for a reason, you know.
Right.
And they hit on all the right notes. No pun intended. But awesome.
You're up, buddy.
Oh, me? Okay.
Yep.
I'm also going to cheat and mention one of the greats at the very, very beginnings of his career, known back then as Johnny Williams. Hmm. He did the theme song for Lost in Space. Now, he did two variations of the theme song. I like the one from the second season.
Right.
for those of you who don't remember, I'll hum a few bars. Anyway,
you should have kept going. We would have jumped in.
Yes, come on. Yes. Come on. I mean, that, what a great, again, as a child, the TV would be on, I'd be, I don't know, getting a sandwich or something, and I'd hear that theme, and I would just come running as fast as I could to the TV. Eat lots of space! So I love that theme. And again, it, and I think it's kind of a theme that we're developing here, which I love. It puts you in the right frame of mind. It paints a picture with sound, and you know what you're about. You're about to witness fun adventure out in the unknown, and that is what that music evokes, fun adventure. And so what a great job. What a great job. Thank you so much, Sean Williams. Of course, went on to immense success in movies, and we'll get into that. But the other one that I'm also very, very fond of is Morton Stevens' Hawaii Five-O theme.
Oh, how can so you good. Not
it's so talk good. About Hawaii Five-O? You know,
just the beginning, you know, it's just the drums.
Exactly, with that beautiful montage of all the Hawaiian things. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. So that is another really beloved theme, and Joseph had mentioned that he had a theory that if they were to bring these shows back, if they used the original theme, they probably would have a better chance of success. And I said, hey, actually, that happened. They brought Hawaii Five-O back, and they in fact stuck with Morton Stevens' amazing theme, and it's so much fun.
Who wants to follow that?
Right.
There's no way you couldn't give it to any composer in the world and go, we want you to rewrite the theme to Hawaii Five-O. They'd laugh at you.
They'd be like, no, thank you.
They're all gonna laugh at you. Beautiful. That's a great theme. My God, to get your blood pumping, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, in television themes, from some of my favorites, I like the idea that some themes have words and stories. And I love the idea that you could pick up a TV show that you've never seen before, and it will tell you what you're about to see. It sets up the story. Like, you know, come and listen to a story about a man named Jed. They're going to tell you what it's about. Right back in your ear. They're going to tell you the story, right? You're caught up. You're caught up in the beginning. You know what you're going to see.
That's
you know
right.
Who these people are.
Yeah.
One of my favorites that do that is another Sherwood Schwartz series. Very, very esoteric, I think. A lot of people don't know about this series, but it was the theme was written by Gerald Fried, and of course with words by George Wiley, and of course Sherwood Schwartz himself. And that's the series called It's About Time. And it's a really jaunty little theme, very similar to Gilligan's Island. In fact, they used a lot of the same sets as Gilligan's Island. And it's about the theme song will explain it. It's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place. It's about time, it's about flight, flight traveling faster than the speed of light, about space people and a brave crew, as through the very air of time they flew, past a Roman senator, past an armored knight, past a firing Minuteman, to this modern site. So these astronauts go back in time to end up with
Wow, I wonder what that show's about.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly! Right? It tells you right there. You know what it's about. That's cool. It is a lovely theme. It's jaunty, and it's when you hear it once, it's in your head forever. You're just going to go, oh, God. I think Crackle, the TV station Crackle, has episodes of It's About Time, if you guys are remotely interested.
I have never even heard
really? Of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. Imogene Coca is the caveman wife, and she's hilarious. Of course, it's Imogene Coca.
I must immediately go on YouTube and find this,
Yes, it's about time.
All right. Good. That's a heck of a recommendation, yeah.
That's deep, deep digs, but I love that theme, and I love that show. I couldn't tell you maybe two episodes from my memory, but I just remember the theme. I remember the theme. Right. Another theme that I will always remember, and mostly because it's based on a classical hit by Nikolai Korsakov, Flight of the Bumblebee, is the Green Hornet. The Green Hornet was a nice
Al Hurt piece.
Yeah, yes. To of course, Nelson Riddle's Batman theme. The Green Hornet, around at the same time, used the classical piece Flight of the Bumblebee, but then Billy May rewrote that, rearranged it, and jazzed that sucker up, and then Al Hurt played the hell out of that trumpet. And it is like, you know, I mean, it's so cool. Quentin Tarantino used it in Kill Bill Part 1 as the bride was arriving in Japan. He plays the Green Hornet theme almost in its entirety. because it's so freaking cool, you know. She's on the bike, it's just, oh my god, I love that theme. I have that on a disc with other TV themes, and I will play that in repeat as I'm driving. Oh, by the way, great driving song.
Yes.
Great driving song.
Make sure you're on a straightaway. Make sure you're on an interstate. Oh,
Yeah, The Green Hornet, arranged by Billy May, performed by Al Herr. Just absolutely fantastic thing.
Genius.
Ben.
So I'm going to call back to two things we've said. When you got the original show and it's got an iconic theme song that's a character in the show, I feel like if they tried to start Doctor Who again without that song,
of course,
have flopped instantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the and the fact that they keep remixing it, but they never get very far from the original.
Right.
You can sure the version of the song today is different than the first version, but not really.
Still singable. Yeah. As long as you can still sing it or hum it. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then back to the sort of meta themes of like, this is what you're about to watch. There's a show called Phineas and Ferb.
Oh yeah.
And I love that their theme song includes Easter eggs for the coming seasons.
Yeah.
That every single thing that they talk about, crazy stuff we're going to do in the show. And then they do it and they'll sneak them in. And by the end of it, it's become such a running gag that they treat it like the kids in the show treat it like a checklist. They go washing a monkey. It had to be done. And then they move on because it's in the theme song, so we have to do it.
Right.
Yeah. But that Phineas and Ferb
very clever show.
By Bowling for Soup, which is
Yeah.
There's a second verse to the theme song, and I'm a little sad they never got to replace the first verse with the second to do a whole nother series. Phineas and Ferb.
Awesome. Yeah. It's a very clever show, folks, if you haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. Two apparently genius children. And they go on these crazy adventures, and it's supposed to be during the summer. It's like the longest summer ever. I think they even mentioned that in one of the shows. It's like, does this summer feel like it's going on forever? and then their sister is always trying to bust them and you know, get them in trouble with their parents. And of course, Candace always misses them. They manage to complete whatever they're going to do, whatever crazy time travel-y thing they're doing or whatever they're doing, the machine they're building, this contraption in the backyard. It's always gone by the time their parents get home, and it's very cute. Yeah, I like that show. Well, from the small screen to the big screen, we all go to the movies. We get our popcorn from the concession stand, and
by the way, I wanted to give one quick shout out to Murray Gold writing the theme for the BBC series The Musketeers.
Oh.
Probably one of the best action adventure themes I have heard in many, many years. Murray Gold.
A recent edition
for the Musketeers BBC series that came out the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Again, find it on YouTube, guys. Wonderful. Murray Gold, Musketeers BBC. You'll play this over and over and over again. Okay.
Nice. Okay. Movies. We're going to go to the movies now, folks. And I think the lightning round kind of works. I know we've got more than just one movie on the tip of our tongue here.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't we try that again for a round? First of all, another round, please, of drinks, and then let's do a lightning round of movies, and we'll each do two and talk about those themes. And if you feel the bug, go ahead and sing it. Mark?
Okay, well, this is sort of an obvious one, and it may even be one you wanted to talk about, but I'll do my other one first. I think Michael Giacchino is criminally underrated. The first few soundtracks that he did were following other composers like Danny Elfman, who has a very signature style, but he's moved away from that, and now he does his own thing, and I think what he is he's a chameleon. He very much works in the service of the piece, and to me, one of the greatest movie soundtracks that I've ever heard, because it is informed by all of the stuff that I mentioned from the TV era, is the soundtrack to The Incredibles.
Absolutely.
If you listen to it, you go, man, that sounds like he ate a bunch of Lalo Schifrin and Hoyt Curtin. And then you read the liner notes and that's exactly what he did, you know, because that was exactly the era. And so he used a lot of percussion that he didn't normally use. And of course the suite at the beginning, which is, you know, which kind of sets up the whole sort of bum ba bum bum ba bum bum ba da 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 da. You know, that sting is great. But yeah. I want to quickly mention there's a track on the soundtrack called 100-yard dash or 100-mile dash, and it's the scene in the movie where Dash is being chased by the robots, yeah, and it's the first time that he really gets to like cut loose with his powers the way he wants to, yeah. and it starts out it's one of the most brilliant pieces of music. I put it up there with the skeleton fight that George Herman wrote for Jason and the Argonauts, because it starts out with literally it's like two notes on a xylophone as he's running. But then it actually picks up in tone and tempo. And then there's a point at which he uses his super speed to knock out the robots and jump ahead. And as soon as he does that, the horn section kicks in with the refrain. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, it's beautiful.
If you're not standing,
I get goosebumps. I get goosebumps when I hear so that.
You know what I'm talking about. I almost stood up in the theater. Literally, I saw that with Kathy, and we drove straight from the movie theater to Waterloo Records and bought the soundtrack.
Yeah.
I mean, I did not
especially
hesitate.
That moment you're talking about, Mark, where it just goes dun 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 dun, and he's like, you know,
he's grinning and
he's running and just, and you're like, oh my god, this makes it. Music really makes this moment.
It's so good. The other one that I want to talk about is a more recent one that serves so well for what it is. And that's Hans Zimmer's Pirates of the Caribbean: Curse of the Black Pearl.
Nice.
It is a fantastic soundtrack. And mm-hmm. and it's so funny because, you know, if you asked me to name six nautical movies, I couldn't tell you what nautical music actually sounds like, because there's not really. And I'm not talking yacht rock. I'm talking there's something about the way he wrote the music that implied Her Majesty's Navy. And that just really, I find that music is very stirring. And and it's one of the themes that when I hear it, I get excited because I know I'm and it's got such a swashbuckling feel to it, you know? It's great. I think it really captures the age of the fighting sail and the age of piracy. Yeah. And I don't think previous soundtracks that followed did as well a job, but they would always use the refrain because the refrain is so strong.
Right. Right. And they incorporated all that. But then the Jack Sparrow theme, that piece of music that's indelibly, you know, linked to him. That's very, very important for a character. Like Indy's got a theme, and you know, you hear that, and you're like, you think of that. Jack Sparrow's got a theme, and I think that's pretty cool. You know, identifies that. Plus, that underwater march in the original is a great piece of music. You know, where Barbossa says, "Take a walk," and they all go underwater, and they're like, "Dum dum 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 dum," and they're the skeletons walking underwater towards. Oh, that's so cool. You know, nice, Aaron.
I'm going to have to give, I'm going to jump over to the Giants for a little bit because I have to give credit where credit is due. And some of the most iconic films, that we have talked about here on the show in the past, are scored by these Giants. And I'll start with, Jerry Goldsmith.
Yes.
Who just, I mean, that you cannot think movies without thinking movie music, without thinking of Jerry Goldsmith. Everything from the amazing soundtrack for Alien, which again, people don't often remark on the music about Alien because there's moments of silence where not much is happening. But if you listen to the soundtrack, you understand that there's not silence. The soundtrack is there. It's violins that are barely registering that and then that cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. I mean, he is creating tension with the score, and it is so subtle and is so just organically a part of the movie that you don't even think about it. You know, if you ask somebody, hey, what was the music like when Ripley's, you know, sneaking around through the corridors? Oh, there's no music. But no, there is. Yeah. And it's fantastic, and it's amazing. And again, the main theme of Alien, the ta-da-da, da 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 da, mm-hmm. as they're coming down onto the planet and doing that amazing landing sequence. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. But then again, this is the same man that did the soundtrack for The Omen, and which is another classic of music that really you just is. You know, the man has done. He did the original Star Trek. Which then they started using in subsequent Star Trek shows. And it just so Planet iconic.
Of the Apes. He did Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
The original Planet of the Apes. That was Goldsmith. Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, it's so amazing. What an amazing career that this man has left with so much beautiful, beautiful music. There is a soundtrack, and this is something that maybe not everybody knows. I would urge people to go out. They had originally done a version of Legend, the Ridley Scott's Legend, with a completely different soundtrack. They went back and redid the soundtrack for an American audience, but Jerry Goldsmith had done a complete scoring of the Legend movie, which is actually a slightly longer cut, and I actually prefer the cut, the European cut, which has a lot of additional material. But the Goldsmith soundtrack is fantastic. It's fantastic. And it's kind of been lost. People don't really know about it. They don't really talk about it. And it's a shame because he was so proud of that work. He always thought it was one of his better soundtracks. And so I really, really urge people to go out and find the Jerry Goldsmith original score for the movie Legend. It's fantastic. And then outside of him, Mark touched on this other one briefly, Danny Elfman. I'm a child of the 80s. And so growing up, I started, you know, especially beginning with Batman, and that's towards the end of the 80s, but Batman and then going into the 90s. I mean, Danny Elfman was pretty much on every superhero movie that was not Superman.
Yeah.
he did so many different scores. And he has a very, you know, I've heard complaints that he is repetitive, that he kind of, you know, all soundtracks sound like Danny Elfman. They even did a thing on MST3K where I think Crow was listening to the music and Crow started jumping and dancing going, Danny Elfman, Danny Elfman, this song sounds like Danny Elfman. and it does. Exactly. Danny Elfman, Danny Elfman, this song sounds like Danny Elfman. And he does. He has a signature style. You know when you hear a Danny Elfman score, but certainly there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, Batman and he did Nightbreed, which is a beautiful score, haunting and you know, definitely again evokes the mood. Like these aren't just monsters; these are monsters that are heroes. And he does it very, very well to more lighter fare like Mars Attacks. And just all kinds of wonderful, wonderful soundtracks. So as far as people that are not the big guys, John Williams, obviously, Danny Elfman would be somebody that I would definitely encourage. And Graham Revell, I want to sneak in Graham Revell, the pro. He's also very, very good. But anyway,
nice. Good choices there. Movies, I tell you. Mark, my brother from another mother, you mentioned Skeleton Fight, and I got nervous because I thought, oh, he's going to steal mine. And you didn't, which was good, because I want to bring up the soundtrack composed by John Debney for The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
Yeah.
And John Debney's score on that, and it's one of my favorite soundtracks. I listen to it just casually around the house. Dun, dun, dun. But the skeleton fight when Sinbad has in that, and it's all xylophone. And the skeleton's just going at, and Sakura's controlling him, and Sinbad's fighting up the stairs. It's just, oh my god, it's thrilling. The Cyclops theme in that, which is all brass, deep brass horns, which evokes the size of the thing and the menace of its power. And it's, you know, and it makes that sound. It almost mimics the roar of the Cyclops in that film. That it's got that bass to it, you know. And it's, everything about that is an amazing soundtrack, folks. The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, John Debney. It's outstanding. I used to play it. When I would DM and have music in the background and action sequences for my Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad was one of them. And I'm going to really quick sneak in a third one, but I'm just going to mention it by name. Basil Polidori's Conan and the Barbarian, another great soundtrack for D&D. Now, I'm going to go, God, it's so hard, guys. It really is. It's hard. But when you think about movies and you think about themes, my all-time, you mentioned Williams, and I hate to cheat again, but my favorite John Williams theme, just forever, is going to be the theme for Superman.
Yes. I knew one of us would do this. Yes.
Oh yeah. We have to.
Yeah. I mean, Star Wars. Yes. Indy. Yes. I mean, God, just the list goes on and on. Harry Potter. The list goes on and on. But for me, his Superman theme is pitch and note perfect. It captures what I want my Superman to be. It's heroic. Mm-hmm. It's noble. It's truth. It's justice. It's apple pie. It's the American way. It's, you know, it's a rousing fanfare when he catches that helicopter in one hand and Lois in the other, and he flies up to the building, and it's rum-ba-bum, ba-ba-ba-bum, and he puts it down, and he's smiling, and he's gorgeous, and he's Christopher Reeve, and he's like, so long, folks, and he effortlessly leaps up into the sky like an angel. It's like, that's Superman! Oh my God, it's Superman! Yeah. And that theme, that music is, boy, you could play that, and I'm at attention, man. I'm up. I'm ready to go. You
want me to Richard grass? Donner, by the way, Richard Donner has said on the DVD, on the special release Blu-ray, that the music, he's like, the most beautiful thing about the Superman theme is that it says it's in the name. It says the name, you know?
It does.
Because of that. And then Superman, the theme actually says Superman. It's amazing. It's amazing.
I'm cheating. James Bernard, Hammer composer. He wrote all the Hammer themes, most famously the Dracula theme, and very much like John Williams' Superman, it says the name. Dun, da-da, Dracula.
He
wrote it that way.
Yeah.
He said, you know, it's very, very threatening sounding, and he used the word Dracula to inspire rum, da-da, you know.
That's great.
Theme. I love the Superman theme. I mean, just literally, I will do anything if you play that for me. You know, Joseph, you know, go cut the grass. Oh, I don't want to. Dun, da, dun, da, dun, da, dun. Okay.
Watch me. Watch me.
That's right. I'm doing it with my hands. It's unstoppable.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. Ben.
All right. I'll talk for a moment about the Batman theme. And so it's funny. Hans Zimmer is a composer who likes to be accessible to his fans, and he loves to talk about his process. Mm-hmm. So when he talks about his Batman theme music, what he brings up, and if you kind of pay attention to the music there, Batman doesn't get a theme. He gets a note, and then once he's good enough and he earns a second note, he gets a second note. Oh. He gets two notes, and that's his theme. The Batman theme in that is just, duh, and that's it. That's the whole theme. So and then the Joker gets to go the other way. He gets one note only. Mm-hmm. So it's this strange sort of atmospheric approach to it. So what I'll then when Danny Elfman was working on the Justice League movie, which is a whole other topic I don't want to get into, because love it or hate it, hey, there's music in it. Danny Elfman was asked, because you have to bring back the themes, because you can't really have the heroes without the themes. When Batman comes on, you hear the Batman theme, and the interviewer asks him, "Well, which Batman theme?" And Danny Elfman gives him the dirtiest look and says, "The Batman theme."
Nice.
You know that
take
one.
Take that.
Well, he says Hans Zimmer did some amazing work, but he didn't write a Batman theme.
Right.
And it's now that I think about it, Ben, you are correct. Like, I remember that, like, the Joker will come on screen. We're talking the Zimmer one. And then all you hear is da-dum, da-dum, da-dum.
And that high pitched whine that just sits on one note.
It's the same. Boom, boom. Yep. Boom, boom. It's the same note.
Yep.
And Batman has that. Dun. Wow. I never even thought about that.
Because it's the first two notes of the Danny Elfman, but he never quite gets to be the hero. Because that's what Zimmer's painting. Yeah,
that's genius.
Look at that. Genius. You learn something here, folks. Even us gentlemen nerds, constantly learning.
We all have to drink. Ben just schooled us. We all have to take a drink.
I know. Ben,
he's not even here. He's in a K, for heaven's sake.
I was given a second helping.
love it.
All right. What else? No, that's great.
So my second movie I'll pick is Vertigo, And again, this is the cheating one, because this is modern. What I picked is all of modern movie scoring, because Vertigo lays down a lot of groundwork. It's just Bernard Herrmann going, look, this is how movies work now. And it remains true. He says, we don't have functional harmony. We have these kind of strange, they're specific interactions between chords, but they are not correct. But that's how it's going to work now, so just get used to it. Right. And we have a chord that's made of six notes that should never work together, and now they're going to work together, so get used to it. Yeah. Because that's how Bernard Herrmann worked.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
And Vertigo... That Vertigo theme, if you could, you know, hum a few bars, because I have this memory of it that it indeed makes you think Vertigo, because it's
well, we all have to do it together, because again, it should all be a little off key too.
We can so lovely.
And then it goes,
and it fades in and out. That horn there at the bit during that sequence.
Yeah.
So
things just roar and come on and disappear, and noise. Things pass, and you don't know what they are, but it's happening.
Quick television round. Back to TV.
Back to TV.
Quick television round.
We've been crapping on Danny Elfman, but one of the best pieces of music he ever wrote in his entire career is The Simpsons.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that.
In some ways, it is literally.
I would like his entire
career.
And I agree with that. Great music. To me, one of his best TV themes was Tales from the Crypt. But that's.
Of course.
Sure. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. I think because it's got the strings, it's got the bump 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 bump, the real bombastic. It's like circus music, you know. It really does have that kind of that sort of mad carnival feel to the whole thing, and.